Hello?
Hi, Bill.
President, how are you?
Fine. I'm sorry I was out of lunch. You call.
Oh, that's all right. I knew you were awful busy. I hesitate to call you. First, I wanted to say I thought the report on your Gromyko meeting sounded pretty good. I hope it's not off base.
Well, I don't know.
I hope it's an accurate report.
I don't know what report you got. I thought that was a little bit stretching it on non-proliferation. I thought generally it was good on other things, and it was a very delightful, scintillating, stimulating, exciting, enjoyable hour and 45 minutes, and I would say he talked probably an hour and 20 of it, and I talked to maybe 25, primarily in response to questions that he asked about our plans and our hopes and our intentions, and very, very frank. Both of us spoke rather bluntly. He does by nature, and I did by purpose. The Russians, you know, don't have any constituency much. They just do what they want to, and the newspaper boys were raising hell because he didn't come out and get in front of the cameras. And why didn't he do like Coup did the day before, a few days before? And he said, well, there's a little difference in their constituencies. But on non-proliferation, I told him I tried to find every way we could to accommodate him and to come into agreement. The man sat in that chair, held the power and the decision. It would never go to anyone else. That I came in and MLF was pretty well agreed on in the government when I came in. Some of our best friends, George Ball and others, were rather strong for it. And they demanded that, they were generally recommended, all of my advisors did, that I tell Wilson when he came over here that he had to do it if he expected us to continue our alliance and play with him. And that I told him I thought that was a little bit dominating. A man just had a 3-vote margin. I was rather sensitive to that. I'd had just 1-vote margin myself for a long time in the Senate. I didn't want to be blackmailing people. And when I discussed with you, what you thought about it, you thought we didn't need to be in any hurry about it, and you'd just kind of slow down on it. And I talked to Mansfield. He felt the same way. I talked to Russell. He felt the same way. I talked to Dirksen, Hickenlooper. It's pretty general. So I just told Wilson to go on back and see what he could talk the Germans into, that we weren't demanding they take this or that. It made Atchison a little mad, and it made some of the others, but if we had felt that we had to share the weapon with other people, we would have maybe shoved the MLF, but I had broken it up instead. But I could assure him I never, as long as I occupied the presidency, and I didn't think any of my successors would ever be wanting to give this decision to anybody else. And if we wanted to, we couldn't get 1 vote in Congress, and I didn't know whether what he'd do with the Warsaw Pact, but my guess is they'd make their own decision without letting them vote by majority vote. And I didn't see why. That wasn't a pretty good assurance to them, and I didn't see why we wanted to wait until India and Israel, some of them, made further progress to go on. I was ready. But I said I was ready when I came in here, and I reduced my defense budget, and I reduced our nuclear stockpile and our production. And I closed down some reactors, and Khrushchev did the same thing. But when you had a change over there, all at once things froze up, and they started calling me a traitor and a murderer and everything else. And I've never said one unkind word about the Soviet Union or any of their leaders. I haven't even fussed about their system. As president, I've been a very mild man, turning my other cheek, and I don't understand why they call ugly names. He didn't make any reference to that. But he said it was very encouraging. No, it felt that way. I said, now, I signed the agricultural agreement. I did it with some misgivings because I didn't like you turn Hello Dolly back in Japan after it had gone that far. I never did understand why you did. But I want to lean over backwards to cooperate, and so we went ahead and signed a new one. I hope you don't turn any others back that way. If you don't want an agreement, say so. It won't happen, but I want to encourage him. He didn't make any comment, turn him back. He just didn't answer the things you pointed out. But he said that in basis that he didn't have anything to do with North Vietnam, and he didn't control them or have any power over their decision, but that he felt like he did have influence. And I said, we thought so too. And I adopted the Gromyko plan. I said, he talked to Mansfield and the Fulbright and the MacBundy and the Bob McNamara and the Rusk on the second pause and the first pause. And I told them, they said 12 to 20 days, Morse, all of them came to see me. And I had questions, but I went ahead and did it because I wanted to stretch it, give every chance, but it didn't do any good. And I'm very anxious to do anything and everything I can. Our people will be there in 24 hours. We're not asking anybody to surrender anything. We don't want anything they've got. We're very clear that we'll come home 24 hours with every man we've got, just like we did in the Dominican Republic. We'll turn our bases over to the country, let them build hospitals, schools, industrial plants, anything they want to. Just admittedly. And all we want you to do is get the other folks to agree to do the same thing. Well, they said, we don't have any, we can't tell them what to do. We're not that nature, but we do think it is a problem. And well, to be honest with you, and it's a pure guess, and I wouldn't be held to it, and if I thought you'd repeat it, I wouldn't tell you. But my judgment is that he moved very strongly in the direction of helping find a solution. He didn't say that. He didn't imply that. I just looked at him, and if I know anything about human nature, I guessed that. And I think Thompson got the same impression. And I think the rest of them. He wasn't no argument, no quarreling. Very jolly, very happy. Got up, put his arm on my shoulder, almost like a fella running for office. Said that he was very warm after we got up and started moving around the office after all this exchange had taken place. And he said that Brezhnev and Kosygin had asked him to especially thank me for some understanding that I had exhibited from time to time. And I told him, well, I want to visit your country. I want all your people to come here. I wish Mr. Kosygin come see us. I wish Mr. Brezhnev. I want all of our people. I want our artists, our musicians, our politicians, our businessmen. I want them to know your people. I'm not afraid of you, and I don't think you ought to be afraid of me. And I think that we're the two powers in the world, and there's no reason why we ought to keep all the world feeling that we're going to blow it up, because I'm not going to. I don't think you're going to. I'm not afraid of you, and I don't see any reason in the world why you ought to be afraid of me. You got nothing I want, except I want to know you better and want to exchange goods with you and want to exchange scholars with you and want to exchange people with you and want to see you get along and do well. I think you want to do the same thing. And he liked it, and one of the men remarked that there had been a lot of conferences with the Russians, and they thought this was by far the best one they'd ever heard. And there's some old hands at it. I had, Dobrynin. Dobrynin has always been very cordial, and I think her understanding of me likes me. I believe he and his wife have been nice. And so I said, we want a space agreement. I proposed it. We're ready for it. We're anxious for it. We want a non-proliferation agreement. We thought the only thing worrying you is whether we're going to let anybody else decide this thing with us, and we're not. I said, I'm not prepared to go far enough to say I'll never have another alliance, and NATO's out, and CETO's out, and CEMTO, we're not going to even look at it, and all these other things. We don't expect you to abolish your alliances. I am saying to you that I'm not going to let the Germans tell me when to fire a weapon, or the English, or anybody else.
Yeah.
And if I did, the Congress would throw me out of here. I said, I can't get one vote. And I am telling you that I didn't start the MLF. Hell, I killed it.
That's right.
And I did it by myself. I'm not supposed to be any expert in foreign relations. My State Department all recommended the other opposite. So did McCloy. So did Acheson. All of them came here. All of them experts.
Well, that
And I got on the phone one afternoon with Knapp, and I talked to a half a dozen trusted friends, and they said, well, we might want to come to that, but let's don't do it this session. Let's don't push it. Let's don't shove it right now. And so, anyway,
that was the right thing to do. You did the right thing, in my opinion.
Now, I told him I was the consular agreement. I was for that. I told him that we very appreciate working out the air agreement last week. I appreciated what they'd done on fisheries. Maggie damn near busted up by giving out interviews. You senators, I got y'all give out interviews quicker than anybody I ever saw. I guess I used to give them out when I was a senator, but with this fisheries thing, we were moving on it with Baggy over in Moscow, and by God, he just gave out the air agreement before the Russians or anybody else was ready for it.
Yeah.
We consulted him, and he kind of announced it like he negotiated.
Yeah.
But the air agreement, the fisheries agreement, the space agreement, the consular agreement, the non-proliferation, we're ready, willing, and anxious for all of them. He didn't go out to the press raise hell because he didn't come in front of the microphones. He didn't want to. I don't know why. But they said, Thompson, some of them said he wanted to get home and write the best cable he'd ever written before he went to dinner. So I don't know anything about him. That's about a summary of an hour and 45 minutes.
Well, that's a damn good one. That warrants a story.
There's two things that I got out of it. One is which I don't think you understand our Manila thing. I'm doing the things that Manila I think you want done. I'm not making any new alliances. I'm not making any new commitments. I'm trying to work in a way where I'm dealing with a good many generals, you know, and Key was coming here in October, and we agreed that we didn't ask him to come. He just announced it. We agreed that we would see what progress they'd made in the defection program and on the election program.
You mean he's coming here before Manila?
No, he was. He had announced he was coming here in the fall. So the Koreans had been wanting to have the meeting. They weren't in on the Honolulu meeting, which we thought worked out very well. We got commitments on devaluation, and we got an agreement on taking over the port and stopping all this waste and blockages of ships. We got the agreement on devaluation and a lot of inflationary import duties and things of that kind are important. We got a new defection program where we've taken in the first 6 months of this year. We've had more defection than we did all last year, and they're surrendering sometimes up there in droves. And we told them we wanted to check and see what results they had on inflation, on devaluation, on import duties, and on the port, and on the election. We didn't want to just promise and talk. We'd had a lot of that, but we wanted to come back and look at the box score at the end of nine innings. So the Koreans came in and says, well, we've got 44,000. We think we have some voice. And the Thais and the Filipinos, and Marcus envisions himself as a new voice in a new Asia, and that he's gone through all this once before, and he's fought the guerrillas, and he thinks that the Asian bank, he's just really intoxicated with that. Blacks got them all, they just feel like it's just like Arkansas does when it beats Texas in a football game, or just like, yeah, I know it. I'm damn glad of it. I started to call you up and say, God damn it, you crowed last year when you beat poor little Texas. And I hope by God you see one of our second-rate clubs beat you, Baylor.
That's not a second-rate club. But we've always been tough as hell.
Well, murderers. So he wants they all, it's kind of like the Baltimore Orioles. They feel real good about Black. I wish you'd go out there with Black. I wish you'd see some of Asia and talk to them and visit with them. You're the one that's been raising all this hell about these regional organizations and about these banks.
I'm just encouraging you.
Well,
I
would call it hell. I would call it hell.
Ah, no.
So I would go out there and I'd get my name. I'd start the next thing you know, he'd be calling it the Fulbright Asian Bank. And you passed it 82 to nothing up there or something like that.
Oh, this is the right thing. Oh, while you mention that, You know, the Congress this time has given you authority to take 10% of that development loan fund and siphon it through these international...
Yes, I saw that. And I think that's good if George Mahon gives us money. Of course, you gutted us on this bill, and then your favorite friend, the New York Times, while you were bragging about how you gutted me, they gave an editorial and said, poor Johnson, why didn't he do something about it? Did you see that editorial?
Bragged about gutting it and didn't gut it.
Did you see the Times editorial on it day before yesterday? They laid it all on me. And here you used a hatchet, you and Wayne Morse.